Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Hol dir jetzt das gratis Mac-Menü-Upgrade in der McDonald's-App und mach aus deinem Big Mac einen Double Big Mac oder Big Mac Bacon TS. Nur für registrierte App-User in teilnehmenden Restaurants, nicht zu Mac-Menüs Mall.
This podcast is brought to you by Wise, the app that makes using different currencies easy. With Wise, you can send and spend money worldwide at the real-time mid-market exchange rate. There are no hidden fees either. See exactly what you'll pay up front, every time. Join 16 million customers already saving with Wise. To learn how Wise could work for you, download the app or visit wise.com.
Hello, I'm James Reynolds. Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. In BBC OS Conversations, we bring people together to share their experiences. And this time, it's conversations after the attempted assassination of Donald Trump. The man who's taking on Joe Biden in a bid to make a return as US president reflected on being shot and said in an interview, "I am supposed to be dead." Could his near miss, a miss by millimetres, alter the course of this year's election? We hear from Trump supporters and bring together undecided voters to discuss their options.
I don't love this choice. I liken it to us living the film Grumpy Old Men, because that's what it feels like.
It was then the most serious attempt to assassinate a former or current US president in four decades. Donald Trump was at an open-air rally in the Pennsylvania town of Butler. He was wounded in his right ear. You must have seen the footage of that near miss. One of his supporters was killed and two others were injured. The suspected gunman was shot dead by a Secret Service sniper. In the moments after the attack, with his face spattered in blood, Donald Trump raised his fist. And he was also seen very clearly to mouth the words, "Fight, fight, fight." Pictures of him in the seconds after the attack have become images to be used in his bid for the White House. The chance been taken up by his supporters. Let's hear firstly, then, from two eyewitnesses to the shooting. Todd runs a stall selling Trump-branded honey and is a regular at these events. Melissa is from Newcastle in Pennsylvania. This was her first time at a Trump rally. She was there with her father and 12-year-old son.
Once the return pop, pop, pop started going, my son just like kind of freaked out. He just froze. He's like, "Oh my God, Mom, I'm scared. I'm scared. I'm scared. I'm scared." I'm like, "You're okay. You're okay. We're okay. Just go ahead, get down on the ground." He was crying and he was definitely shook up. Even after the shots, we still didn't even really know what went on.
My first thought was they got him and he break down emotionally. And I saw the fluid come out of one of the cranes, the bullets had ricocheted and hit the hydraulic lines of where the big speakers are, where the crane is on the right side of the stage, and down came that. And I have to share with this an unfortunate story. I talked to people, and I met these two 75-year-old ladies. They'd never been to a rally. You know, I see them the day before. "What time are you going to get there?" "Well, the gates open at 1. We're going to get there at 12. And I go, "No, ladies, you know, Melissa, you were there. You know how hot it was." They're both 75 years old. And I said, "Ladies, if you want to get a seat, and I'll help you, you know, you need to get here at 7 in the morning." So they did, and I met them. They were three seats over from the gentleman that died when he dove over his family. And they hung out with them. You know, you're in the risers. You're not going anywhere. They spent the day with these people. And I ran into them afterwards, and we sat and cried. And, I mean, they took some of the innocence away from your son, Melissa.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, he was...
There were still kids running around trying to survive the shots.
When we were leaving, you know, there were people talking and people on the phone as to what happened. And one of the guys was like, "I just spoke to my wife who was up front, and she said he was bleeding from his ear, but he raised his fist in victory." And I was like, I didn't even believe it. I can't even imagine what was going through his head at that time. Like, does he even really realize that he was grazed by a bullet then? Or like, you know, just his reaction of, "It doesn't matter. You can try, but I'm not going to stop fighting.
We're going to keep fighting. He's if not, he's going to do more things." And Melissa, you were there. It's like a party atmosphere. And when I was in Miami with him, The event was on Tuesday night, and people started arriving on Friday. And it was a 100-degree heat index, and they sit there for days. And then the crowd keeps building, and it's like a rite of passage. These are people 40, 50, 60, 70 years old. It's just going to drive the crowds up more and galvanize America.
I believe you live faith over fear. You know, if we let fear control our lives, we wouldn't even get in a car and go anywhere. And that's kind of what I, you know, try to tell my son to just kind of calm him. Yeah, you know, it was a terrible event, but you were there when at a historical event, you were there.
Todd and Melissa in Pennsylvania. The man who died at the rally was 50-year-old volunteer fire chief Corey Comparatore. He dived on top of his family to protect them when the shots rang out. So let's head 8 hours drive northwest to the city of Milwaukee in Wisconsin. Like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin is a swing state and a must-win state. In other words, if you want to win the White House, you've pretty much got to win both Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. Donald Trump's Republican Party has been holding its national convention in Milwaukee in Wisconsin this week. Earlier in the week, with a bandage over his ear, he received a rapturous welcome from thousands of supporters. And we heard that phrase again, fight, fight, fight. And the convention also saw the announcement of Ohio Senator J.D. Vance, who's just 39, as Donald Trump's running mate. In other words, he'd be the vice president if Mr. Trump wins back the White House. Well, a little earlier, I spoke to three people for whom the convention was to be a major highlight. Sarah Chamberlain is president and CEO of the Republican Main Street Partnership, which supports Republicans in Congress. Melanie Collier is a political consultant and Trump supporter in the key state of Georgia. And Darius Mayfield is a Republican candidate for New Jersey's 12th congressional district. He is a longstanding Trump supporter.
My hope, Trump just continues to be Trump. You know, that's why we love him. My first time ever voting in this country, even though I was of age, was in 2016 because I heard the words of Donald Trump. We knew who he was, being from New Jersey, you know, knowing Trump for quite some time. I understood that he was a man of his word and he was going to motivate a lot of people. And I'm glad to see that this country is where it is right now, especially the Republican Party, which is we have a lot more minorities in this party. We have a lot more women candidates in this party. We have a lot more unity in this party. And it really is becoming the big tent party because of Donald Trump, the things that he said, the things that he's done. And I think after what happened the other day with the failed assassination attempt, I think it's just going to bring this country and this party even more together. I was glad to see that Donald Trump has given the word to all. Everybody's speaking that he wants them to speak about unity. Let's not forget that from the start of this year's campaign, he has been more of a unifying voice. He has been more calmed down, more laid back in his rhetoric. We saw that even at the debate with Joe Biden, where he could have easily been making faces, making fun of Joe Biden, but he did none of that. He stood there, he acted presidential, and that's what we expect from him going forward.
You've mentioned unity there, but I wonder another way of looking at it. Might unity simply be another word for obedience? For obeying what he has to say? And isn't a convention, isn't a political party often about debate, about presenting different ideas and letting that contest of ideas go ahead?
Yeah, I don't think it's about obedience at all. If anybody knows me, my motto is not black, not white, American. I am a MAGA Republican. I came in 2016, but I'm also a very level-headed person. I'm not what you would consider an extremist. And the reason why I love this party and why I've become so ingratiated in it is because we can have a difference of opinions. I don't agree with everything that Republicans do, just like President Trump does. You can see it on his abortion policy. You can now see it on how they've changed the charter on marriage and things of that sort. This is a party that's open to many ideas. I don't get castrated for having different ideas, and we are able to have open debates.
Well, again, going towards the theme of unity, I am with the Georgia delegation, and we had just left the breakfast where our governor spoke and also spoke of unity and rallying behind the Republican candidate and rallying behind all the candidates that are running for office this time. And I want to say that as far as the unity goes, we are seeing that the atmosphere is powerful. When Donald Trump came into the room last night, it was a different countenance that he presented last night. It was, he knew what had happened to him was very serious. A simple little change of that bullet going from one direction to another, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. There's a strong sense of the Holy Spirit being in the room. I can't express that. It's very strong. It's very powerful. And we're seeing more and more people paying attention to that. The unity is out of I think that it's really coming from a sense mm-hmm. of what could have happened. And now we still have him here with us. We still see that we all need to rally with one another. And I'm very excited about what's happening. It's the most powerful experience that we're having here in Milwaukee.
And Sarah Chamberlain, you're on your way to the convention to get a sense of some of the atmosphere that Melanie and Darius have been experiencing. Who's on your list of people you'd like to speak to when you get there?
We are the majority makers, so we'll be talking to some of the delegations, which I'm excited about, like New York, and making sure they turn out to keep our New York House members especially elected. Montana, talking to the delegates from Montana, making sure we're ready to take back the Senate seat there. So we really spend more time talking to the delegates through there than talking to each other. We talk to each other all the time back here in D.C.
I understand.
That gets kind of old.
I can understand that. And Darius Mayfield, on the convention floor as you go around there, who do you want to speak to? And are there any messages you want to convey to anyone?
Well, listen, I'm hoping I get the chance to speak to Sarah out there. I know they do a lot as far as supporting candidates out there. So, Sarah, please, you know, come find me on the floor or send me your info if it's possible. Would love to talk to you. My main goal out here, one of my main goals, is to talk to big donors out here, because to win my district right now, it doesn't take much money. And if I could connect with some of these national donors, right now is the first time in a long time that they're predicting that Trump, a Republican candidate, has a chance to win not only New York, but New Jersey as well, because of the mood of the country. And I have a suspicion that after what happened the other day, it's even more in our favor. So if I can connect with some of these big donors out here, I'm the right candidate with the right message, and we can take New Jersey as well. So I'm looking forward to meeting everyone.
I could hear you almost switching into campaign mode for those last 30 seconds or so. Republican supporters Melanie, Sarah, and Darius. This is BBC OS Conversations after the attempted assassination of Donald Trump. I'm James Reynolds.
I'm Adam Chowdhury, and today on What in the World, we're asking, how do I become an Olympian? I speak to two young athletes. They explain the sacrifices they've made to make it to the 2024 Summer Games in Paris, and what it means for them to compete on the biggest stage in sport. What in the World is the daily podcast that helps you make sense of the world in under 15 minutes. No prior knowledge required. Find us wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
On Thursday night, then, less than a week after surviving that assassination attempt, Donald Trump took to the stage to address the Republican National Convention.
Together we will launch a new era of safety, prosperity, and freedom for citizens of every race, religion, color, and creed. The discord and division in our society must be healed. We must heal it quickly. As Americans, we are bound together by a single fate and a shared destiny. We rise together or we fall apart. I am running to be president for all of America, not half of America, because there is no victory in winning for half of America. So tonight, with faith and devotion, I proudly accept your nomination for president of the United States. Thank you.
We're putting together the finishing touches to this program on Friday. And as things stand right now, and bear in mind, it's a pretty fluid time in U.S. politics, the November vote will be a rerun of the Trump-Biden 2020 election. But since his stumbling performance in the June election debate, President Biden has faced a growing set of calls to withdraw from the race. So we brought together voters who come from differing political perspectives to get their idea on who they want to vote for in November. Michelle is in Chicago in the state of Illinois. She's mostly, but not always, voted Democratic. Collins in Utah. He's undecided as to who to vote for. And Jacob is a student in the southern state of Georgia. He's also undecided. Let me reinforce that. He's in a must-swing state, and he hasn't yet made up his mind. In other words, he is in the upper echelon of important voters in this election.
I've been seeing what's happening, and it's quite moving. As someone who doesn't like Donald Trump, seeing him, you know, walk in to all those cheers from his supporters and having just barely survived, you know, an attempted murder, it's rather moving. And it's something I could see being very, very powerful for his campaign.
Decisive for you personally, Jacob?
It's definitely convincing. It's not pushed me over quite yet to vote for him, but there's still one more debate to go, and there's obviously several more months till the election.
Let's cross to Colin in the state of Utah, which has been reliably Republican, but not necessarily reliably pro-Trump, given the fact, Colin, that one of your senators, Mitt Romney, has been a strident critic of Donald Trump. Where do you stand?
I'm completely undecided still. I've watched some of the Republican National Convention, and to me it's a lot of fanfare.
I heard you choosing the word carefully.
Yeah. My favorite thing about it is watching them all insult each other as they run against each other and then all coming together to vote for one guy at the end. It always amazes me at how divisive everyone acts and then they come together. So good on them for that. Yeah. It hasn't decided anything for me yet, though.
But let's cross now to Michelle, our third guest in Chicago, Illinois. And Illinois is a state that is reliably Democratic, has been so for many years, with the home state of Barack Obama. And Michelle, when you look to your choice between Biden and Trump, what's on your mind?
When I think about my choice, it is an uncomfortable choice, to be perfectly honest. I am from a family that has historically voted Democratic. I have maybe the lone wolf. Well, I've occasionally deviated from that. But when you look at this choice, it is an uncomfortable choice. I don't love this choice. I liken it to us living the film Grumpy Old Men, because that's what it feels like.
I see.
I don't identify with the current Republican platform. I am more comfortable with the Democratic platform right now, but I don't love it. I cannot honestly say to you that I'm going to the polls with great enthusiasm. I don't like these choices. Both parties could have done better. So while I may not be totally comfortable with where Biden is right now, I think we have to put the candidates aside and look at the party platform. That is what I would be voting for. Not the individual, but the platform.
I understand her point completely about party platform versus candidate. However, I'd say the situation for me is reversed. I actually mostly agree with the mainstream Republican Party platform, but I don't agree with Trump as the candidate himself because of his actions, you know, after the election and, you know, his behavior through much of 2021 through, I'd say, early 2023. The unwillingness to admit that he lost the election, fake electors, all those different things kind of really made me uncomfortable. But in terms of party platform, I side much more with the Republicans than with the Democrats.
Voting for what we know right now to be a convicted felon.
The reason people are talking about replacing Biden is because, like, there's just, I think it's really obvious at this point that he's having trouble with his age. I have that complaint about Trump as well. To me, they're too old. And I know that's a really simplistic thing to say, but one of the reasons why I was sort of excited about some of the younger candidates and disappointed that they didn't have a chance was because I don't identify with octogenarians. And then the other problem with replacing Biden with Kamala Harris is she is not popular. And I think the Democrats are kind of really worried about, like, they think that's a failing scenario. They have a candidate who got a record number of votes in 2020, Biden, and I don't think they have an easy way out with that.
You run a construction business in Utah, the reliably Republican
yes.
state. Do you notice a political divide as you go about your daily life and people you know at work or people you might see after work?
Well, in Utah, which has been red for a long time, primarily supporting Republicans, the Republicans in my company and who I talk to are much freer about just saying pro-Trump things. And then I think that the Democrats are a minority and they tend to be quieter. I think there's definitely that thing. But I think that I speak to a lot of left-leaning people all the time. And as soon as I indicate that I'm not really decided and I don't lean one way or the other, it opens things up. So I think there's a little bit of suppression because they know that they're surrounded by Republicans. People are much more reasonable in person than online. And so I think people find consensus much more quickly.
I would tend to agree with that overall, yes. Because I'm a student, I would say I'm in a more left-leaning field than I'm in a right-leaning field. But people are willing to actually discuss their political views that are different and not go at each other's throats in person. I feel like I have to hold back some of my views because most people around me are more left-leaning, but I don't feel like if I'm telling them my views that they're going to just, you know, look at me as some awful human being and we're actually able to have a good conversation. Online, it's an entirely different story and insanely toxic.
Yeah, I refuse to engage in any sort of debate online. It's futile. And I feel like in this country, we have the days of being able to have civil discourse have really gone away, and people are very polarized in their beliefs. And that's frightening to me because I believe we should be able to have conversation and, you know, respectfully disagree. But it should, you know, I hate the idea that we're now in these camps and it's this or that, or, you know, it's not a great time. And most people try to avoid the discussion of politics.
Take us through to then the 5th of November, voting day. I know there's early voting day, but let's say we get to election day itself. Talk me through what you'd be doing that day, Jacob in Georgia.
Yes, I would be looking at the combination of Biden's track record over the last 4 years, which I think has been abysmal, looking at the Democrat Party's platform and what they've been promoting or allowing for the last 4 years, especially the last several months. And I would be looking at the Republicans, what platforms they're pushing, what policies they're pushing.
So even on the last day, you'd still be looking at those platforms?
Yes, because one of the things that concerns me is the choice, for instance, of VP by Trump, of choosing Vance instead of a more moderate person like Tim Scott, catering more to the hard right side of the party. Sure. And I'm a fan of that. But it comes down to, you know, how the Democrats react to this assassination attempt, because it's only been a week, and how this second debate goes. Because seeing Biden on stage back at the end of June, I don't feel like that man could be my president if we ever went to war. And that's my concern, is if we go to war, this is the man with the nuclear codes and he can't even answer any questions.
I agree with Jake about his assessment of Biden. It really worries me how non-cognizant he seems to be. It's hard to be confident in that, but I will probably not be decided on election day about the president. But people died for my right to vote, and I'm going to be there to vote, and I'm going to be voting for a lot of other people in local elections as well as national positions. So I'm going to be exercising that right. And there's been a couple of times where I voted for a joke candidate for president because I just gave up. But I will still cast my vote for as many principled people as I can. And I probably won't vote for Biden. I think I'm, at least right now, he's not on my list. I just don't have any confidence. But I'm interested to see if he's replaced. And that could change things for me.
We might then contact you on the evening of the 5th to see what you did that day. Mm-hmm. Final word then to Michelle in Chicago, very briefly, on the 5th of November for you.
5th of November, I will more than likely vote early. So I will have to go with the platform and with the understanding that, you know, there's a reason why we think long and hard about the choice of vice president. And that is where I will be. I don't envision a world. I certainly don't envision a world in which I'm not voting. The Republican platform would have to do a complete 360 for me to decide to make that choice. So, like I said earlier, this is an uncomfortable choice for me. But I think I'd rather stick with the party that I feel like I have the best opportunity with.
Michelle, Colin, and Jacob, with what Michelle described as some respectful disagreement, as well as other areas in which they all coincided. Our thanks to them and to all of our guests this week. And there was mention of a second US presidential debate that's scheduled, as things stand, for early September. I'm James Reynolds. You've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.
Hol dir jetzt das gratis Mac-Menü-Upgrade in der McDonald's-App und mach aus deinem Big Mac einen Double Big Mac oder Big Mac Bacon TS. Nur für registrierte App-User in teilnehmenden Restaurants, nicht zu Mac-Menüs Mall.
I'm Adam Chowdhury, and today on What in the World, we're asking, how do I become an Olympian? I speak to two young athletes. They explain the sacrifices they've made to make it to the 2024 Summer Games in Paris, and what it means for them to compete on the biggest stage in sport. What in the World is the daily podcast that helps you make sense of the world in under 15 minutes. No prior knowledge required. Find us wherever you get your BBC podcasts.